the third person, Shakol Nia Bidvaro, and this represents Nochach. God is intimate. God is right in front of me, but God is also removed from me. And you have to have, in effect, this represents the notion of love and fear, love and reverence, perhaps. That the love is the closeness we have, and the reverence is the sense of boundary and respect and awe. And therefore, Hashem is magbihi lashaves, but he's mashpili liros. And now it talks about what Hashem does in the world itself. Mikimi. Now you notice, by the way, all of these, there are extra yuds here. This is a poetic. It could have said hamagbia lashavet, hamashpil liros, mekim meyafor dal. Right? It doesn't have to say magbihi, mashpili, mekimi. Right? Moshivi, it could have said Moshiv. My mind has gone blank. There are five extra yuds here. And the Vilna Gaon remarks that there are five extra yuds, and he gives a reason. I don't remember what it is. I'll have to check it. But the Vilna Gaon can make a note for maybe next week that grammatically, these are not non-grammatical, because in biblical Hebrew you can attach an extra yud even to a masculine verb. It's a poetic addition, but the Vilna Gaon actually gives an explanation of these five yuds. But mikimi me'afer, kamadol, he raises from the dirt the impoverished one, a dal. And may I suppose from the dung heap, Yorim Evyon. Now, this seems to be parallel synonyms. Chazal explained that Evyon is someone that is even worse off than a dal. And Evyon has nothing. And the shorish of Evyon is Iva Aleph Beis He, which means desires, meaning he desires everything because he has nothing. Dal means low. And you see the difference. The dal is in the dirt, but the evyon is in the garbage. So the dal might be in a low state, but the evyon is even worse. In fact, the ashpa usually does not just mean garbage, it actually means a dung heap, excrement and other things. So it's a particularly low and despised place. And God can raise the dal from the afar, and the evyon from the ashpa, lahoshivi, to make them im nedivim, with the princes. And then it means with the princes of their nation. Now the Malbim says a nice little twist. Very often, if you're poor or you're in a very lowly state and you move to a new community and you make a lot of money, it's possible for you to buy respectability. But in the place where they knew you as the schnorrer, where they knew you as the beggar, where they knew you as the person of a low status, then even if you have a lot of wealth and everything else, you'll be looked down upon. But with Hashem, Hashem can say, you will be among the chashuv of people, not only somewhere else, but im nedivei amo, among your own. Amo means, amo doesn't mean God's nation. Amo means among the nation of the dal and the evyon. And of course, keep in mind that David HaMelech is also speaking autobiographically about his own life, where David was a shepherd. David was made fun of by his brothers. He was looked down upon by all. He was persecuted by Shaul. Shaul wanted to kill him, and yet God brought him from the depths of despair to the high position that he held. So then he mentions one other one, Moshivi Akeres Habayis. Now again, this is obvious, but this is a phrase that's often taken out of context. You know, we often talk about the woman being the akeres habayis, which is translated as the foundation of the house, as the basis of the house. Well, I mean, that's 100% true, but that is not what the phrase means here. Here, akeres habayis means a barren woman. You know, you have to read the sentence. Moshivi akeres habayis eim habanim semecha.
This is Hannah.
God makes the barren woman to be the joyous mother of many children. Right? So it's not Moshivi akeres habayis, period. That's not a full sentence. Moshivi akeres habayis, God makes the barren woman of the home Aim Habanim Smecha, the mother of joyous children. This Chazal say was David HaMelech reflecting upon the blessings that God gave Chana, a woman that was barren, and God gave the great blessing of the righteous of Shmuel. How God can change everything. God can change barrenness into fertility. Now, of course, it's interesting that David chooses, I think, to accentuate the positive. Now, if you remember in davening, we talk about the other side of it too. We say, Mashpil Geyim, God lowers the arrogant. And God raises the humble. David doesn't want to talk about downfalls here, although presumably, you know, we can go both ways. David HaMelech is emphasizing the blessings that God can bring to a person. And of course, the message is one should not despair of their fate, that there's a galgal, there's a wheel, as it were, and sometimes one can be on top, one can be at bottom, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu could change all of these things. Keherifayin. The Brisker, now there's a Chazal that says, Afilu cherev chada munachas lo al savara. Even if there's a sharp blade, that's a short sword that's on your neck, do not give up hope. So the Brisker, I've said again, it's just explaining the Gemara. He says, what is the phrase, a sharp blade on your neck? Imagine you're put in a guillotine. Okay, so by the time you're tied up in the guillotine, you pretty much think, you know, there's no chance. Imagine they loosen the blade and the blade's coming down to the extent you can think, there's certainly no chance. Imagine the blade has already touched your skin. You don't think there's a chance then. So Chazal is saying, Afilu cheref chada munachas al tzavaro, even if the blade is already touching your skin, there's still a chance. There's still a chance. That's Ad Kedei Kach.
Chana's prayer was Hashem Morisha Ma'ashir.
Right, Chana also emphasized the fact that things can change. Alright, so maybe we'll stop here and we'll continue this next week.
If things can change, but the change underneath the change is not changing, but in essence, your faith has already been planned out
to
change, correct?
Not always. Sometimes that's true. But sometimes Hashem responds to prayer and changes the predetermined fate. In other words, sometimes...
But does Hashem know that you will then change so that...
Well, Hashem... Yeah, it's a complicated thing. In other words, Hashem knows what you're going to do, but Hashem has contingency plans based on how you respond to the various challenges. Through prayer, through tshuva, changes can occur.
So you're saying that...
Well, Hashem knows it, but Hashem doesn't predetermine it. And Hashem happens to know the future. But Hashem does not interfere in your process of choice. Hashem has no control. That's the one thing. Hashem has no control over your actions. But the problem is, Hashem happens to know what you'll do.
But
you don't know what you'll do. And Hashem doesn't control it. Hashem does not intervene and make you behave a certain way. That's the statement.
And
everything is in the hands of heaven, but choice. Yes, yes. That gets us into the question. Somebody walks into a store and they get shot. Now, on one hand, nobody can die unless, for whatever reason, God decreed their time was up. On the other hand, the guy that shot the gun had free will. So what if the guy would have chosen not to shoot the gun? So God would have had something else happen. The roof would have caved in. You know, how do you balance human autonomy with God's plan? That's a real hard one. I look at it as a chess game, meaning a chess master can manipulate any move you make towards the achievement of some ultimate goal, even though he has no control over the move you make. So God can take your move and turn it in the direction that he wants it to go. But it's a complicated thing. I mean, you know, if I understood it, you know, we would be God, as it says. If we understood how this works,
yeah,
we would be able to do it.
Moses wanted to know that.
Okay. Okay, have a good week, everybody.